Welcome to the S Words Podcast.
A greater den of scum and villainy than we'll ever find? Something like that?
A more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
I'm drunk.
All right. Hello and welcome to the S Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture subjects beginning with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I'm Dominic Nguyen.
Sung Lee.
Michael Lee.
All right. So this week's topic is Star Wars, so we're going to have to outdo the Star Trek episode because that is all that really matters for me right now. So let's go with... So I'm going to ask you guys the usual question we like to ask each other. What was the first time that you saw Star Wars?
First time I saw Star Wars, let's see. I was maybe 5 years old. We stuck in the tape and we watched them all in a row because my sister wanted to see them because she was 8 and she was old enough to understand. I just saw pretty lights and explosions, and I was like, ooh. And then I got older, and I watched it again. I got a little older, and I watched it again. I got a little older, I watched it again. And I got a little older, and I watched it more times.
Hold on, let me guess.
And then I got a little older, and the prequels came out.
Did you watch it again?
No, actually. Not once the prequels came out.
All right, what about you, Sung?
All right, I actually asked my oldest brother about this yesterday, actually. I asked him, and his answer was pretty brief. He said that we all watched it. He didn't really say exactly what age I was, but I would have had to have been, like, preschool or so. But he did say that we definitely watched Empire in theaters. But since I was 2 at the time...
You're so lucky.
Since I was 2 at the time,
hey, you saw
I don't
Jedi.
Really remember it.
Kind of. Come on, Kevin.
That's similar to me. Technically, I was present at the drive-in theater for Empire Strikes Back.
Just like how I was technically at Return of the Jedi.
But the first real memory I have of the films is seeing Return of the Jedi in the theaters.
Kevin has this face of, I want to strangle you
and as far,
out of envy.
Well, as far as the first thing ever, I remember having the Hoth playset with the little clicky gun turret.
Yeah. Oh, and the very small version of the main reactor.
I had that. And then you press
discs,
a button and it
pops up.
Yeah, it pops up.
Because I have the updated version.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my brother had all the toys.
Yeah,
all the big sets.
I also had an Empire Strikes Back lunchbox. It was the made of metal, not that plastic stuff.
Oh, so
yeah,
lucky.
Let's see, I had a metal...
And I had the Empire
Jedi
Strikes Back pop-up book.
I remember...
I had the pop-up book, too.
Actually, wait, I think so. I think at age 3, I remember doing the Return of the Jedi coloring activity book. So that was my first exposure to Star Wars. It's just that doesn't really count, because I had Ewoks.
And I also played the Empire Strikes Back board game, with the little spinner in the middle, and all I remember really is you collect Force cards, and you challenge Darth Vader, and he usually beats you. It's, like, really hard to win.
Kevin.
All right, so technically my first experience with Star Wars was Return of the Jedi.
In the fetus.
Yes, my mother was pregnant when she and my father went to go see it. And so yeah, I was born in 1983, so I missed out on that chance, but I guess that's the closest I ever got. But it's kind of be surprising to you guys. I didn't see Star Wars until 7th grade. My English teacher in his room had a gigantic cardboard cutout of Darth Vader. And I was like, you know, I've never seen Star Wars. So I went and got it from the library one weekend on Friday. So Friday night I stayed home and watched Star Wars. And when I was done, I watched Star Wars. And the next day, I watched Star Wars while eating breakfast.
Wait, let me guess, and then you got a little older and then you watched Star Wars, right?
No. Immediately after breakfast, I watched Star Wars again.
Okay.
And then I just watched Star Wars and Star Wars. And Sunday I watched Star Wars a couple more times. So now I was like really itching to watch Empire Strikes Back. But, you know, I had to go find it in the library. Maybe it was borrowed. But then my father made the biggest mistake of his life, is what he claimed. He bought the trilogy box set for me.
I think I have that one, the VHS one, right?
Yes, the VHS yeah. one that has the pictures of Darth Vader, the Stormtrooper, and Yoda.
That's
and
the best mistake a dad could ever make.
Yeah, he still says, oh my god, yeah, that was when we lost you. And for the rest of my next... Until like until Phantom Menace came out, I pretty much watched the trilogy once a day, and on weekends maybe 2 or 3 times. So yeah, I've actually calculated this out, and it's a very good percentage of my life is watching Star Wars. So let's go through something I asked you guys to rank the trilogy. This is pretty easy for you guys. I'm pretty sure I know what everyone's rank is going to be. I think it's all the same, but let's just try anyways. What about you, Sung?
2, 1, 3. All right, that's. Technically,
yeah, 5, 4, 6. Actually,
6.
Like Zack of the Clones.
Well, you see, I go Star Wars Christmas Special, and then
the Ewok movies, right?
No, and then the Clone Wars movie, actually.
Oh, the new one.
And then the Ewok movies, one. Yes. No, actually, yeah, it's 5, 4, 6.
My original ranking?
Although 4 and 6 are very close for me.
My original ranking from way back when I was younger, that would be 4, 6, and then 5. And my contemporary ranking, now that I'm not 7 years old, is 4, 5, 6.
Ooh, breaking the mold.
It's fine, it's fine.
Well,
nothing
I
wrong
guess
with
you
it.
Can guess I'm 5, 4, 6 as well. But why do you put A New Hope over Empire?
Simply because I did see it and recognize it as a full story. It had beginning and an end. And with 5 being the bridge point of a trilogy, it doesn't have the same finality, it doesn't have the same ending.
Although on the plus side, unlike other bridge points, you don't end that movie going, well, where's the next half of it?
Yes, that
that's
is true.
Yeah, it stands alone on its own because he knew
like
that
certain
he may
trilogies
not
nowadays,
ever get to make it.
Like Matrix or Pirates.
Yes, actually,
or,
very much yes. like those. Yeah, those yes. But then they didn't really have great sequels.
No, they didn't.
No.
I mean, not sequels. When I talk about Star Wars, I don't think of them as sequels. It's just the next chapter in the story. But let's go into this. So Star Wars is a huge phenomenon in 1977 and remains a huge phenomenon, even now after a bunch of crap that's happened. But how do you see how Star Wars fits into science fiction? Do you really consider it science fiction or space opera? Do you consider it
a lot
of part
of
science
a lot
fiction?
Of like the a lot of the film what's it called historians or whatever they think of it as a sci-fi western.
Yeah, it's very soft science fiction. They never really care about you know how to explain things. Although I remember reading a lot about that in high school. It's like, oh, how does this work? Oh, that's how it works.
Star Wars Technical Journal.
Yeah, and also the RPG source books.
For my part, I don't really consider it science fiction.
Yeah,
it's science fantasy.
Yep.
Because they don't care to discuss the science part.
And in fact, in explaining it, they ruined it.
Yes, I was about to say that. Like, once they started to try to explain the science behind that universe with midichlorians,
with
I mean, they just barely even touched upon midichlorians, and that already was like a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is soft science fiction, and so, you know, you can lump it into fantasy if you want. It's,
I accompanied Master Yoda.
Shut up, Mike. I remember the story
I think I'm the only one at this table who acknowledges those movies exist.
No, I know they exist.
We will talk about
For me
them.
To poop on!
During this topic, I have called a brief segment on the downfall of Star Wars, a.k.a. the prequels and onward.
No, it's like speaking of the science was I remember that one story about how George Lucas wanted Dooku, how he wanted Dooku to have a curved lightsaber. Like and the people are like, yeah, you can't do that because the science doesn't fit it.
Yeah, because the crystal can't reflect the light. In
Kevin,
the way.
Actually, wait a second. Yeah, whatever.
You can't.
I know.
It's light. It's still light. Light does not change, nor do the crystals.
This is why trying to explain it ruins it, Kevin.
Well, you know, to me, I've never considered it as science fiction just because of the concept of the Force. It makes, you know, that's a superpower. Once you're up to that point, then we're talking like Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's vaguely science fiction-ish.
Yeah.
Not really.
Well, then we're starting to talk more about fantasy then,
yes.
right? Because really, Star Wars follows the really simple concept of the hero's journey.
Yep,
very
which
much so.
Is so super popular now with a bunch of franchises, particularly the one of the big franchises that actually has outdone Star Wars in terms of revenue, Harry Potter.
Yep.
Like, how many times when you first heard about Harry Potter, maybe around like books 3 or 4 that time, when people were like, oh, maybe Voldemort is actually Harry's dad. Because it's not like, you know, you probably didn't hear that rumor, even though J.K. Rowling was like, dude, it's not Star Wars, okay?
For those of you who haven't reached that point in the Harry Potter series, spoiler.
Whatever! I didn't spoil anything. Okay, Voldemort is not Harry's dad.
Spoiler. Oh my god. lack
sure,
of spoiler, oh my god.
Sure everyone
anti-spoiler.
Has no problem with that. The hero's journey, right? A young man finds a wiser, older man that teaches him something, brings him to growing up, and maybe
goes
learns some
to
stuff
hell.
About
he
his...
faces his father.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, you know, it's really funny that College Humor did that video about, oh, I love Star Wars or I love Star Trek, because really, the thing that's funny about the new Star Trek is it doesn't really follow Star Wars in that it actually just follows a hero's journey. You got a farm boy that meets the wiser, older Captain Pike, and he has to go find his place along with a whole bunch of other characters. Just a very
and
simple
he has
concept.
To face a galactic threat.
Yes, and he has
the one
to
that killed his
he
father.
Has to deal with something to do with his father. Yeah. And
yeah.
And he goes to hell. It's just that it's an icy hell, and he gets chased around by a Grignac in hell.
Don't forget fake Grignac. And everybody forgets fake Grignac. I'm a strong supporter of fake Grignacs everywhere.
Anyway, so like the hero's journey, then, you know, there was the whole concept of when Star Wars was put together. George Lucas wanted to, he had different ideas than what we eventually got. I mean, originally we did not have Luke Skywalker. We had Starkiller.
Yep. Anakin Starkiller.
Anakin Starkiller. And then we had all those other concepts of like Han Solo was an alien. At one point, Luke Skywalker was a girl.
Or a 60-year-old war veteran.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to go into that too deep, but, like, do you think that George Lucas just got lucky in that he did not, that he just happened to pick all the right choices? Because some of those ideas that he had originally feel prequelish.
Well, here's the thing is that he, remember that he actually brought Joseph Campbell in to watch the Star Wars movies, and Joseph Campbell said to him, "You are drinking from the same cup as the people who, you know, made the original story, you know?" And so it wasn't that he got lucky. It's just that he followed every other story. He tapped into the collective subconscious of these stories, you know? And I'm sure that everybody since has tried to do that, but they haven't written and rewritten and rewritten and rewritten until it sounded good. And, you know, the secret is that, hey, guess what? You know what sounds good? The same stuff that sounded good to you when you were a kid, which was the same stuff that sounded good to your dad when he was a kid, you know?
Ewoks!
That didn't sound good. Well, actually, that did sound good to me when I was a kid. Dang it!
I still have no problem with Ewoks because I grew up with them. And so it's like I forgive him for that.
Yeah.
So during the production of the films, the thing that I find most interesting is that, George Lucas did the very first film. He directed it, but he eventually handed it off to Irvin Kershner for Empire and Marquand for Jedi. And I think, you know, when that kind of style is sort of like what the James Bond franchise has done, what the Harry Potter franchise is trying to do, to keep it fresh and let other people have their own ideas presented, even though that same universe actually feels very much the same across those three films. Then we get to the prequels, and
it's George Lucas
wants to just have a stranglehold on everything, and I don't understand that. How did A New Hope not screw up so badly? Was it just the lack of power actually restrains him?
For one thing, it was because he didn't have to write any romantic dialogue for A New Hope.
And also, I think it's also a thing of he got really in love with the CG and what he could do. I guess a world of the infinite possibilities that he had kind of made it so that he lost his focus, I think.
It's the Pixar versus DreamWorks thing, you know? Pixar does stories and then they sort of adapt little bits of new technology in so that it fits the story. Meanwhile, the knock on DreamWorks is they look at the technology and say, okay, how can we build a story around the technology? And they adapt the story to the technology instead of the other way around. And one of these feels much more mechanical, much more formulaic. And one of these feels much more like there's a story to be told. And hey, look, there happens to be some technology in there.
Although in George Lucas's case, it was, hey, I want to make this, but the technology doesn't exist, so I'll make the technology to make this.
Yeah.
For my part, I think it's just because George Lucas is a different person 30 years ago.
Didn't he get divorced shortly before the prequels?
He went through very, very many changes, personally, yes.
He has a lot of things going on with his family, which is usually why he's too busy to do a lot of things.
Yeah, which is also why the dialogue between Anakin and Padme is so terrible. Terrible!
Do you have an example?
Something about sand.
I'm just thinking about the one where it's like, has love made you blind?
I hate sand.
I hate younglings.
Coarse and gruff.
Anyway, so Star Wars comes out in 1970. Smooth.
Mike, I will kill you in your sleep.
It comes out in 1977, right? And huge numbers and huge run in the theaters, and, you know, became the number one grossing movie domestically in terms of box office until E.T. shows up in 1982.
It's still in, like, in the top five, isn't it? Something
it's
like that?
It's number three right
number three?
Now. It's,
is that adjusted for inflation, or is that just plain raw gross?
It is number two. It is number two.
Adjusted
two?
Or raw gross?
Because of Dark Knight, it is number three.
Yeah. I was like,
this is not adjusted.
Okay.
But the thing just is that, remember gross. That Star Wars includes its special edition release, which did boost it over E.T.
Got it.
And then Titanic came later
on. And then Dark Knight.
Yeah. I can't believe how close Shrek 2 is to the gross for Star Wars.
But that makes me sad.
Yeah, it's a very, very depressing thing.
Anyway.
The box office for Star Wars is huge. Empire comes out. It's still big. Not as huge. It didn't even reach $300 million, and then Jedi reaches the $300 million. But, you know, together, you know, you got a good amount of money going there, especially considering internationally. And we're starting to talk about, you know, movie franchises that get in the billions.
Yeah.
I think it is the first one to really pump everyone into that kind of a thought that, yes, we can actually have a franchise that's going to make so much money.
Yes.
It's not just a matter of just the money either, because it's really shocking to tell other people find it really shocking when I say that you have to remember that A New Hope won 6 Academy Awards the year it came out, including a nomination for Best Picture and a nomination also for Screenplay. And even at that time, the critics, and I'm not really critic, but the Academy was recognizing Star Wars. If Star Wars came out now, would it get that kind of recognition? If we had a phenomenon like now, would it win? Because we had Lord of the Rings.
Which won, actually.
And that won for...
But only up for the third one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was more as a tribute to all three.
As opposed to...
Yeah, well, there are a lot of complaints about that, but yeah.
But it's one of those things where, I mean, if Star Wars happens now, then the past 30 years of movies would have been so different.
I know, which is why...
So it's one of those things where you sort of ask about, it's like, what happens if Lord of the Rings didn't happen?
So if we send Kyle Reese back to stop George Lucas...
What?
Then we actually wouldn't get Kyle Reese.
Yes, we would have no Terminator, we would have no Battlestar, we would have no Star Trek Resurrection.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars is responsible for so much.
Would Star Trek have done better if Star Wars never existed?
No.
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 No chance.
Would it have done worse?
It wouldn't have happened. Worse.
No. We had Star Trek before.
No. The revival of Star Trek.
The revival with the Star Trek The Motion Picture. The only reason Paramount started looking at that was because 1977, Star Wars proved that sci-fi.
Sci-fi now.
Was viable and profitable. And say, hey, well, what do we have at sci-fi? Star Trek? Yeah, let's throw that on.
Yeah.
One thing that really got to me is it was probably what happened with our generation was that they finally did the special edition re-releases after the 1995 THX re-release on VHS, which was the last time you were going to own it in that format. Did you guys see all three films in the special edition format in the theater?
I did not see it in the theater in the special edition format, but I did get the THX remake, re-releases.
I did see them all in the theater on each of the opening nights, actually.
Yeah, I think I was in college at the time.
Yes, I had just entered college when they did the Star Wars one.
I guess I would have been in high school then.
1995 was high school for me, too.
Yeah, I was 95, then I was in high school.
And that was when I became a much bigger fan of Star Wars, because I found all these other people in high school who were like, hey, Star Wars, let's go!
Yeah, and this was college, the first time I found people willing to do the whole midnight screenings and everything. So we camped out at Jack London Square.
Yeah. I had my brother, so I was like, I had no choice.
Wow, because I was in high school and I couldn't go to those midnight screenings or anything like that. I had to wait till Friday night.
I was all about those because of my friends. I mean, I've said this before and I'll probably mention it again, but one of my friends, Ryan Burbick, he dressed up as Darth Maul on the day of release for Phantom Menace. Yeah. And then he later regretted it, but, you know, he walked around school for an entire day as Darth Maul. And then we're like, yeah, okay, we're going to the movie with you.
All right, so the special editions come out. There's kind of a revival of Star Wars, and especially now that in the public eye, the prequels are coming up, 1999. But we're gonna stop on that for a while, because we'll talk about those at the very end.
When we get sad and start drinking again.
The special editions, did you like them? Did you like what he was doing? Did you see the signs?
No, I did not.
I did.
Yeah. There's some things that were definite improvements, and then there are others, you know, the whole bar scene.
Yes, exactly. That was the point where I said, wait, what? Did Greedo just...
Wait, that was the one with that one? That was the first one that did...
included the new Greedo shoots first.
Yes.
Wow, it's been that long?
Yes.
It seems so much more recent than that.
The only recent thing that he changed was
DVD release.
Yeah, it was in the DVD
release. With the CG Jabba in New Hope, right?
No, that was also special edition. There were very minor changes in the DVD release, but we're sticking on special edition right now.
Okay, special edition. I mean, he only added a few creatures here and there. They updated the CG in certain parts. They didn't update the whole the torpedo going into the whatever that is.
The exhaust port.
Yeah, and like that? that to me has always been kind of a weak scene for me, and I never understood why he never redid
what?
That.
What? Come on, the torpedo goes and then it turns down.
Yeah,
the way torpedoes do.
Well, no, it's just like when like just the way the port looks, it really looks like a drawing.
I'm surprised that. But then again, the thing that you remember.
This is the thing that I remember is that I bought it to own it, and then I just kept watching the movies.
Yeah, the things that I remember are the scene with Greedo shooting first. That was a major negative for me.
Yeah, I actually didn't watch that then. I just bought it to own it.
And then there was a scene that they put in with Java. It's like,
have you seen the original Java scene?
That's
right?
The thing. I saw the original. It's like, it is a bone thrown that way, but that Java looks so
small. That's a problem. Like, he didn't look right at all.
Yeah.
It's really funny if you ever, for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, the original clip of it is available on the VHS. I wonder if they ever put it on DVD.
It's on the extras.
Oh, it's on the extras now? Okay, it's called, it was originally on something called From Star Wars to Jedi, which was a, like, making of kind of thing, those 2 hours. And that was the big scene that was touted, like, oh, you get to finally see the Jabba the Hutt scene when he talks to Han Solo. And for a while, fans were always like, oh man, wouldn't it be awesome if I could finally see this, how it was supposed to be? And then he did it. Sort of, and then you just didn't realize as a fan that you should probably stop asking for things that you were like, it wasn't actually in the movie. Yeah, but I hope it is.
There may be a reason why it wasn't in the movie.
It's like every time that you hit the deleted scenes extra on any DVD and you go, oh, I know why they cut this now.
Yeah, it's not a very good scene.
I don't even remember it.
I love his thick accent.
Hot me lad.
There are times that you disappoint me. Why haven't you paid me? And why did you have to fry poor Greedo like that?
And it really, if you think about that scene, it doesn't really fit in that the characterization of Jabba is different because of the way Han acts in it, because they didn't really know the Jabba character at that point. He was just some random guy.
Yeah, a big guy dressed in a bunch of furs.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing about that scene is I remember they threw fans a bone at the very end with that whole Boba Fett walking into the frame and staring at the camera. And, you know, as a fan, you're like, awesome. But now when I think so much about it, I'm like, wow, what a total waste of doing anything. Why does he have to be there?
Yeah, can we take a little tangent here and talk a little bit about Boba Fett and why he got popular?
I thought he was cool. Yeah,
not only because he looks cool, but he had his own little cartoon for a while, didn't he?
Oh, okay.
Well, he first appeared in the Star Wars Christmas special.
I thought it was the cartoon.
The Christmas special. There is an animated portion of it in which Boba Fett shows up.
All right. The way I saw Boba Fett was from Empire. Was that he was really cool in Empire.
Because he has one line, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe two?
He has a couple.
He was basically the ninja of the Star Wars universe.
He had
the gadget. He could plan things really well. He always saw what the good guys were going to do next, and he would plan ahead. You know, he was just really smart that way.
He prepared.
And then in what has now become the typical George Lucas fashion, he takes really cool ideas and then he just
cuts off its head.
He just craps on it.
He just kills them in the most stupid way possible.
I think we've made Kevin sad.
No.
Boba Fett, where?
No, I just had a little something coming up.
a little something coming up. It was a little bile, maybe a little bile. Remember, he's a little clone kid.
Yeah, you shut your mouth. Boba Fett, I think, actually just became this whole glorified character with more and more of the games and books.
He was made by the fans, basically.
Yeah.
So, his original backstory. I'm willing to give out points right here. Can anyone tell me the supposed name of Boba Fett?
Yeah.
The one that you're supposed to know from the books.
Whatever.
Does anyone know it?
I probably knew it at one point, and then I stopped reading the books like 12 years ago.
I've never read the books.
Okay, I'm just wondering whether you guys ever knew it.
Nah.
I mean, I may have heard it from my brother, but because he read the books.
It's Jaster Mareel. Yeah.
Thanks, Kevin.
That destroys your image of him, doesn't it?
Because, I mean, I also heard, like, the backstory of what Boba Fett's backstory was supposed to be, which was he was supposed to be this race of, like, super strong warriors.
No, he's not. He has Mandalorian.
He has the armor from them.
He's not a Mandalore.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
The Mandalore is the name of their leader, though. Mandalorian.
He's not a Mandalorian, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Then I got my things mixed up. I don't know the whole expanded universe thing. I only hear about it third hand.
That's fine.
Really, nothing in the movie tells you anything about that. Or that he has, like, Wookiee scalps across his, draped over one shoulder, things like that.
You know what we do, what I do remember? His ship was designed after a lamppost.
Slave One?
Yeah,
yes.
The Slave One is designed from a lamppost. You just have to turn it on its side.
Wow.
Yeah.
Slave One equals Pixar.
Not that lamp. So actually, the one thing I want to talk about with the DVD release, you know, everyone had been waiting for DVD for Star Wars for so long. We finally got it, and I have to say that I was really disappointed.
I heard people were disappointed, and so I didn't get them.
My biggest gripe with it were the adjustments in audio. There are portions in the movie where there was originally music going pretty steadily in the background, and now they've reduced it, or it's very, very minimal.
But that's so wrong.
They changed the audio levels then?
Yes, they've changed the music mix on it.
I haven't watched the originals enough to notice.
Well, it's a very easy scene if you show someone the two side by side when the X-Wings finally, after they've locked S-foils and they're going to start the attack run against the Death Star, there's this big kind of blaring trumpet fanfare that's supposed to happen. And, you know, if you've seen it enough times, you're like, yeah, I know that part. But then when you see it on the DVD, you're like, where's the music? Because originally everyone thought maybe it's an error. Maybe something went wrong with the mixing. But no, that's how it's supposed to be. That's how George wants the music to sound now. And I'm just sort of like, I wonder if John Williams got any say in this, because
no, he doesn't.
No, it just makes him the music.
I mean, if you think about it, I guess that is something that's another thing that's changed about him is that, I mean, like when you think of American Graffiti, he called that a musical because the music was so important to him, and which is why it was so loud throughout the whole movie.
Well, also, it's just so important. I mean, that scene where Luke Skywalker goes out and looks at the two suns as the Is it the theme of the rebellion?
That's the Force theme.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That theme just starts playing and you're just like, wow. It's one of those scenes where, you know, dialogue would ruin it. And the music just takes so much emotion, you know, and injects it in every scene.
Ebert said a great thing, about when he was reviewing, episode one, where he's saying like, yeah, the scene where Anakin says goodbye to his mother is like that was really weak. And he compared it to the scene where Luke is looking at the two sons. He's like, this scene with no dialogue had far more impact,
yeah,
you know, than a scene with dialogue and this kid saying goodbye to his mother.
Yeah.
For my part, I think the DVD would have worked so much better if they had just done a DVD press of the original Laserdisc.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, that they did do another re-release on DVD that had two discs for each movie. The first disc was the original DVD release. The second disc was the unaltered original.
Nice.
But
yeah,
it was not remastered for DVD. It was equivalent to, and for a while we had these, there were the bootlegs in which they took the Laserdisc master and the Chinese pirates basically reworked it to put it on DVD, and it was basically the same quality there.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was practically like George saying, "Oh yeah, yeah, we're gonna give it to you," and then
we're gonna
slapped
give it,
you in the face,
and then waited 3 years and did it again, right? Or how many years was it in between?
What's really surprising to me is that for the 30th anniversary of Star Wars, they didn't really do a big re-release of the movies. It's kind of strange. They were supposed to do a gigantic box set with all six movies in it.
I remember them saying that at Comic-Con, yeah.
Yeah, that didn't fall through. And
oh.
For all I know, I might be wrong at this point, but I really don't care anymore because I really don't want to own the other three movies. Yeah. I'm not willing to sacrifice.
I think maybe that's why they haven't released it. What's, sales will go down.
What's really interesting about Star Wars is that I think I had read something about this. Between the period of 1977 and 1992 or something like that, there has been a home video release of Star Wars. And it's either through, sometimes they, back then people actually, you know, they didn't have VHS players, right? But if you were really, really, really rich, you had your own little projector.
Yep.
And what you could do was buy film reels that included 15 minutes of select scenes from certain movies. Now, Star Wars was one of the ones that definitely had these. Eventually, there was a point in which you could start renting Star Wars from the video store, and there were a couple of releases that you can only own if you rented it and lost it. And eventually we got to the regular releases, in which point they released a new version every year.
Yeah.
For quite a while. And I'm very surprised that now they don't really do that anymore.
I remember them not putting out a new VHS release for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. During the mid-90s, there was a whole drought of Star Wars tapes.
And then it was a really big deal when they came out with the VHS box set, I remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Needs more Laserdisc.
Hey, they have the Laserdisc.
I know.
During that time, my father was saying, we gotta wait for DVD. But it's like, but Dad, they're on Laserdisc right now. We're watching VHS. There's Laserdisc. I still have never owned those Laserdiscs.
I wonder if those Laserdiscs rotted a lot.
We only rented them.
I really should go buy those.
The closest I got was Indiana Jones 3. I had that on Laserdisc.
Nice.
Wow, lucky. I was a tape kid.
Yeah, so was I. But anyway, we had an LD player.
But not just tapes. I was also...
LDs are a pain in the butt because you had to flip them over.
Yeah.
Like three or four discs.
Also, a lot of them were really badly pressed and the glue would come apart.
Those are the fun ones.
Anyway,
I wasn't just a tape kid. I was also the kid that when 1995, the Power of the Force, the action figure line was re-released. Well, basically, really, they did a new line from Kenner back when we had Kenner toys before Hasbro acquired them, in which they released 9 figurines. And the one that most people will probably remember is Luke Skywalker, in which he has muscles, big pecs.
Lovely.
And a lightsaber that is the length of his height.
You have that.
I have that.
That's where I've seen it then.
Yes. I have that one. He comes with the lightsaber and the grappling gun, which makes no sense because he never used it. I guess it's supposed to be the version of the little hook he uses in
episode 4
across the chasm.
In gun form.
Yes, in gun form.
So that he too can be the Batman of Star Wars, along with Boba.
I should say that since my brother is a big collector and stuff like that, we still have a lot of the original toys that he grew up with in our house.
The 77 ones, the first ones, right?
Well, not really 77. This is probably after Empire came out, where he has the old Hoth set. He has the one where it's the Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker scene, and the window breaks open. I think he still has that and stuff like that.
The Bespin, the Breakaway, that was one of the minis. We never had the minis.
Yeah.
We had the actual figures.
Anyway, so...
I had the Ewok coloring activity book, so screw you both, all right? Both of you.
That first wave, I remember I was planning to go get it, and Toys R Us was advertising it. And when I got to Toys R Us, there was only two pegs for that new wave of Star Wars toys, and... I guess nobody expected the popularity to be as high as it was, the fact that new Star Wars toys were coming out. So I ended up having some Micro Machines for a while, because at least you could have bought those. But eventually, yeah, I did get that entire first wave, including the Obi-Wan that can barely stand unless you use the plastic robe to keep him up. Well, he also had a lightsaber the length of his body. And Muscle Man Darth Vader. And Monkey Leia.
Wait, I just gotta know, did Obi-Wan have muscles too?
No, but C-3PO had pecs. He did not have the silver leg.
For some reason, I remember the toys where the lightsabers could come out of the arms. Like, it has this little thing.
That's the Kenners.
So that's the original Kenners. And if you have this, I will do anything to have it from you. But the original release, no, it's really hard to get. But you had to bought the 1977, like when those, actually well, 78 technically.
I remember us owning it as kids, and my brother has kept a lot of his toys from
them. Do you have the Darth Vader with double telescoping lightsaber? Now, the thing is, like the ones that you know of, there's like this one piece, and it comes as like a thicker tube and then a thinner one coming out, right? You're used to that. And then they have the little slider, it comes straight out of the arm. There is a double telescoping one in which another piece, in which that extra thinner piece actually comes out of the thicker piece.
That's the part that broke off on ours.
You had one?
Well, my brother.
Bro.
Yes.
So
I've got an exhaustive list of all of the Kenner figures.
Oh my god.
But yeah.
I just have
plastic
capes. Heck, I still
have a metal Megatron. Here's what I'll do. During AX, when I visit my family's home, I'll take a look around the garage.
Excellent. See what they have. Yes.
Yeah. The Leia still has her cape. The Bespin gown. I think all of the other
ones. The one in the red gown, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because my sister took better care of her toys than the rest of us did.
Great.
Yeah, because like every time I walk into the garage, I see the Hoth set. And just sitting in the garage, so.
Excellent.
It's better than my garage. I walk into my garage and I see pickling jars. You're a punk.
Well, we also had the pickling jars, but.
Do you guys remember something that Kenner did? Actually, I think, Mike, you know of this, but Kenner pulled off one of the greatest stunts ever in 1977 Christmas, in which they created something called the Early Bird Kit. It was basically a big box that had an IOU in it.
Oh, I read about this.
Because in 1977, that no one knew that Star Wars was going to be this big of a hit, so no one made toys yet. And Kenner did have the license for it eventually, and they said, okay, we cannot get these toys out to production in time.
In time for Christmas. We can't
miss Christmas. So they created the Early Bird Kit, which was a $30 box that had a couple of graphic pieces of cardboard in there, as well as a promise to parents that if you mailed in this certificate, that early next year, you would receive your four Star Wars figurines, which were Luke Skywalker, Chewbacca, Princess Leia, and I believe it's R2-D2. So they basically sold a box of cardboard to a bunch of parents, and I believe the only person that actually got Star Wars action figures in 1977 was the princess of, was it Monaco? Or some place.
Some where, really rich.
Yeah, where
country.
They actually ended up giving her prototypes that were just, that looked good enough to be the actual product on sale. But during that time, there's a whole bunch of people that came out with the great concept of making easy money by taking a flashlight and attaching a big plastic tube to the end. Now, I think just over time, those eventually just always became known as lightsabers. Even in Disneyland, they have those.
Yeah.
They don't call them lightsabers. I don't know what they really call them, though.
I don't know.
The people just point and say, we want that. The sword. Light sword or something like that. But yeah.
You know, they have those in strip clubs, too.
Oh, my God.
It's true.
I love how
the S-Words podcast, ruining your childhood since 2008.
2009, we didn't start last year.
No, but I've been perverting your childhood since like 2000,
You've been
actually.
Been perverting my childhood for quite a while.
Yeah.
So one of the other few things that Star Wars really managed to get its merchandise around was the idea of food promotions, right? And it's really interesting that Burger King had the glasses very early on.
Mm-hmm.
Just like how now Star Trek has their glasses at Burger King as well.
Well, okay, early on for you, I'm taking it.
I thought it was during the Empire time that they were Burger King.
They've done it multiple times.
Yeah, yeah.
A thing.
But the ones I remember were during the prequel times and actually the special edition times. Special edition times, Taco Bell had the toys if you had the kids' meal. This is the only time I've ever had Taco Bell kids' meals.
Because
I was like, what's in the Taco Bell kids' meal? But anyways, they had it.
I'm gonna guess
Star
here.
Wars
cinnamon
toys.
Twists,
and then a bunch of crap.
Cinnamon twists, a toy, and then like a burrito or a taco.
It was some sort of like weird. Yeah, I don't even remember. It wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But I ate them to get my Star Wars toys, including a Death Star toy that it was basically like a piece of plastic, and you kept pushing in this lever, and it would make the Death Star spin around. And eventually, if it spun fast enough, the three little pieces that comprise of the sphere that Death Star,
I think I remember this.
Inside this little yellow bulb, and sparks emit inside of the bulb. And the other interesting thing was that it was not on the checklist of the toys that you needed to get from Taco Bell, but if you ask for the kids that are too young, like the, I think, baby's toy, it was a little Yoda PVC. And you had to remember to ask for it, or else you wouldn't have gotten it in the regular kids' meal. But anyways.
Ah, collectors.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yep.
Then again, you I can't really say anything.
There's whole conventions for Happy Meal toys.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they're impressive, especially the 101 Dalmatians, the people that actually have all 101.
Wait, there were actually all 101?
And a giant vinyl poster of all 101.
Great googly moogly.
And there are multiple people with the whole set.
But yeah, like I said, I can't really say that much, given that I'm looking at a shelf full of Viva Pinata toys, and then behind me in my room, there is actually one of those big collector's boxes of Valkyria Chronicles toys. The ones where, you know, you just open the box and there's a random toy inside. So I'm not allowed to say anything. I'm just gonna let this one go.
You don't remember how many random toy box things I have, do you?
No, I remember. I have a bunch of them too.
You're like, ooh, new set. One case, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Just make sure you always bring John with you.
Yes, yes, of course.
So he opens a box. What's this one? It's not even on the box. That's the secret character.
Yeah, that's actually my part of my favorite story, and it has nothing to do with Star Wars, but it's just funny. What's it called? Toy collecting, and we all took a trip to LA, and it was a bunch of us staying at a friend's place, and so Kevin was at
We went to some place you could buy anime goods.
Yeah, it was some anime goods
jungle,
store.
Maybe
Jungle Gamers.
It was not Gamers.
It was Gamers. Okay. Yeah, it was Gamers. And if you don't know how the Japanese toys work, they just come in these boxes and they have pictures of all the toys. And you don't know what's inside. You don't know what's inside, so you had just had to buy them. And Kevin bought, I don't know, how many did you buy there?
It was Macross Zero, right? It was the Macross Anniversary Collection, the first one from Bandai.
Right. So he bought a bunch of them, hoping to get how many figures? Like 6 or 7 figures?
There's a full set of 7.
Right. So he opens up, how many of the little girls did you get?
Yes, I got the worst one. Wait, 5 times.
Is this a little girl from Macross Zero?
Yes.
Oh, no.
The most plain figure of the entire set.
All right.
And she's just got like a white dress on, right?
It's just a yellow dress, and she can't stand up on her own.
But you did get like a couple of different variants of her, though.
Yes, there are clear hair versions.
Oh, wow.
I do have multiple ones with different versions. But yeah, that figurine sucked.
But to make it worse,
meanwhile,
and another friend of ours who was shopping at the same place, he had bought 7 boxes, and he opened each one. They're all different. Yes, all the different
including
characters.
The variant, including the secret one.
That's what I always do, actually.
No, the thing is that, like, eventually one of our other friends, he bought something for a different set.
He just bought one.
He bought one. He opened it, and he's like, this is weird. This character's not on the box.
Not even on the box.
And I was like, oh my god, he got the secret
figurine. That's the secret character.
Oh,
like,
toy collecting.
I don't want it. It's so ugly. I'm like, but it's the secret one. Do you not understand?
I was actually able to, back in the height of the Fate Stay Night toys, I was like, huh, I'll buy one of these. It's like $5. Open it up. Hey, it's the Saber. Doesn't this thing sell back for like $50? Jackpot!
Yeah, I used to do that for certain like Star Trek toys, but then I realized that I could just pay a little bit more, but buy the whole sets online.
Yeah.
You want to know something? I'll tell you another recent thing about my bad luck with that kind of crap that happened to me recently. So, Corn Pops. Honeycomb has a Star Trek little insignia pin things that light up. And I was like, wow, cool. I want one. I want the regular Starfleet one. And that's what they show on the front. So I buy it. I get home. I look at the back of the box. It's like, collect all 5. I'm like, I could deal with that. And then it's like, here are the 5. And 3 of them are Starfleet. One is Klingon. And one is this ugly-ass Romulan one. Guess which one I got?
It's Emblem of the Tal Shiar.
I had the Romulan one, and then I found out these toys suck because they're basically like laser pointers, but with really weak LEDs. And I was like, well, great. First of all, I didn't get the one I wanted. Second of all, these suck. Well, very good. I'll just have my honeycomb right now.
And honeycomb goes stale so quickly.
I actually still have that box. I haven't eaten all of it, too. Oh. But it has Star Trek on it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of the Star Wars. I think they did breakfast cereal tie-ins.
No, I'm sure they did.
Yes, I have C-3PO's.
Yeah.
I've had C-3PO's. I've had the Star Wars one where it's Darth Vader on the front cover. On the front of the box, it's a red background, and it's basically Cocoa Puffs and marshmallows.
Was it Admiral Akbar cereal?
No. I would love that. I would love that so much.
Akbars, yeah.
But I want to tell you something, Dom. This is how scary Star Wars toy collecting gets.
I know how it gets.
We memorize serial numbers to know which variation of figurines we can get. And there are variations of serial numbers with different things that that are in the actual packaging. So let me tell you this. The regular Obi-Wan Kenobi, the very first issue one from 1995, came on a red card back with the long lightsaber. Eventually, Kenner's like, oh crap, the long lightsabers are a bad idea. We should actually scale these things. So they're kind of accurate. So they release the short saber one with all the other ones that actually have lightsabers as well. But they still have some of the trays with the long portion. So one of the most rare forms you can find is Obi-Wan Kenobi, long tray, short saber.
And those sell for more?
They'll sell for a ton more.
Now, they're here's misprints. The other
thing. Obi-Wan has two different pictures that you can see on the front. They eventually corrected it. There's the one where it's his profile from the very front. It's very artistic. And then there's the one where he's standing. So mix that variation of the card back with the lightsaber variations. So you have three lightsaber variations, two card back variations. The next year, they release all of the figures again, well, most of them, on green card backs, some with hologram stickers over the picture.
It sounds like baseball cards, honestly. It's not that bad.
It's Keith Comstock, 1989.
And all I heard was blah, 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 blah.
This is for one figurine. Multiple ones over the years, and memorize them all. And their prices, and which ones are rare, which ones are not so rare. I'll tell you that for some reason, one of the big white whales for a lot of collectors was Weequay with the freeze frame photo slide with the green back.
You know, I'm just flashing to this catalog of like the top 50 or top 20 most expensive Beanie Babies.
most of them are not worth anything anymore.
Yeah. It's just like, and a lot of them were like mess or like screw ups. Basically.
Yeah. Like the royal blue elephant and things like that,
or like
the duck without wings.
But yeah, it's all about misprints or things that got recalled.
You just got that, didn't you?
What, the duck without wings?
Duck without wings.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, horribly cruel things about a duck.
Okay, we talked about the merchandise too much, so. Let's go into this expanded universe.
Wait, we didn't get to my list.
No, just skip.
No, I will get to your list. Go ahead.
Okay.
list me up.
I'm going to go get a soda.
Star Wars!
Okay, so technically my brother owned most of these, and my sister had some, and I had a couple of these. We had three C-3POs, and this is why I think there was one with a silver leg, because one of them, the leg was different.
Okay, that might be it. Maybe they're just rubbing them vintage line.
Okay. We had a Darth Vader with the saber tip broken off. Death Star droid, Greedo, Hammerhead, Luke Skywalker X-Wing pilot, Power droid, R2-D2, R5-D4, Sand People, Snaggletooth, Walrus Man, and now we get into the Empire line. 4LOM, I guess that's 4 long.
Did you have the full Cantina Band?
No.
We had that.
No, there is no Cantina Band in the vintage, only in the Power. Well, that's probably what you have then, right?
Well, okay.
You had to buy them from the Star Wars fan club.
Oh no, I'm not thinking of Cantina Band. You're thinking of
Max Rebo.
Yeah, the blue guy, elephant guy, yeah.
Yeah, we started getting fewer and fewer as time went on. So this is the Empire line. We got 4LOM, R2-D2 with sensor scope, AT-AT Commander, 2 AT-AT drivers, Boba Fett, Bosk, Han Solo Hoth outfit, IG-88, Princess Leia Organa, Bespin gown, two Lobots, Luke Skywalker, Hoth Battle
you have
Gear.
Two Lobots?
Yeah.
Why him?
I don't know.
He's so lame.
Rebel soldier.
Which one is Lobot?
Lobot is Lando's assistant.
The bald guy with
the reverse headband. Yes.
And Labat is Lando's assistant.
Thanks, Kevin.
You hear that, Lando?
Lando Bell.
Calrissian.
One of my favorite droids was, which one was he? He's like this, basically a box with these really ugly legs.
Power droid.
The power droid. Okay. Otherwise known as Gonk.
Was there a name for the interrogation droid, or was it just called
which one?
The very first one that you see in the movie that comes behind. No, the first one.
Jedi, it's ED-99.
No, it's the one in New Hope that comes in after Darth Vader when he goes to visit Leia. It's just called interrogation droid?
Yes.
Okay.
You can fight them in dark forces. For some reason, they can attack you.
Well, it's jabby with a needle.
Yes.
let's see, where was I? Rebel Soldier, Hoth Battle Gear, Imperial Stormtrooper, Hoth Battle Gear, a.k.a. Snowtrooper, TIE Pilot, Yoda, and then we had the Return of the Jedi, B-Wing Pilot, Biker Scout, Chief Chirpa, Princess Leia Organa, Combat Puncho, Nian Num, and the Darth Vader figure case, which was from the original line.
I'm going to say this again.
That holds 18 figurines.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say this again.
We couldn't fit them all in.
They reissued it. That's one of the ones I've never bought, the reissued case.
I had the Return of the Jedi coloring activity book, so screw you.
Did you also have the Ewok one?
Yes, something like that. I just remember it was a coloring activity book. Yes. It's like, fine. It's like, help Luke through the forest. And there's, you know, one of those little mazes. Or
it was one of the dead ends, Wicket with the spear.
It's like one of these Ewoks looks different from the other ones, you know.
So I have the entire Power of the Force action figure line from the very first wave until the very last wave of the slide waves when they had the little freeze frame slides that you could take out. So I think that's about 14, 15 waves.
Wow.
Of the figurines. And then a bunch of the vehicles like the AT-AT and Millennium Falcon and the Snowspeeder, A-Wing, X-Wing,
that's
the updated X-Wing.
That's the later Falcon, right?
I thought we were going to be moving on from the toys.
The very first one.
The tiny one?
Yes, the reissued one.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay, we're moving on for merchandise.
Thank you.
So let's just do a brief thing about Expanded Universe. I think the books actually became a huge thing with the Zahn Trilogy.
Not just the Zahn Trilogy, but the Rogue Squadron stuff after that.
Well, Rogue Squadron came out a lot later on. I remember it became a very, very big series until they changed it to Wraith Squadron.
Yeah.
It wasn't that much later than the Zahns. It was late 90s, early 2000. Mm. And Zahn was like 95 through 98 or something.
Really? I thought it was earlier than that. Well, you read it when it came out. So
Rogue Squadron was pretty quick
only
after
read it
Zahn.
After all three had come out. I didn't read them one at a time. My sister got me books because she's into books a lot. So I tend to read what she recommends.
All I can say about that is my brother read those books.
Do you remember Shadows of the Empire? That whole multimedia.
Oh, that one was
the big
one. Yeah.
Yeah. The book and then the video game.
Yep.
And everyone was like, a new Star Wars game that has nothing to do with the Star Wars we know. But
well,
it's on Nintendo 64.
Wasn't it like between two
and
three?
Between Empire and Jedi.
Yeah.
And comes up with a whole bunch of different reasons as to why certain things happen, especially the whole Prince Xizor saying, dude, let the Bothan spies take the plans
and then kill them,
and they'll come back and we could just kill them, dude. And then the Emperor is like, well, your skin is green, so I'll trust you.
What?
He also had Guri, who was a pleasure bot.
Are you a pleasure model?
Let's just move on.
Are you sure? Shadows of the Empire. Or as we used to like to call them on the internet, SOT.
S-O-T-E, man. S-O-T-E.
The third wave of figures from Power of the Force were Shadows of the Empire based.
That was,
including Chewbacca.
That was the Mara Jade era, right?
No. That's the Zahn.
Zahn introduced.
That's right.
Good old internet acronyms. Like, for the longest time, I didn't know what KOTOR was. What the hell is KOTOR?
Hey, KOTOR is the reason that I graduated a semester late.
Speaking of KOTOR, there's also the whole expanded universe of the games.
Of the Old Empire.
Knights of the Old Republic. And then we had other things like Dark Forces, Rebel Assault.
X-Wing.
X-Wing, TIE Fighter.
X-Wing and TIE Fighter is just one of the games that I spent months playing.
TIE Fighter,
I spent months watching my brother play that game.
TIE Fighter was so good.
I'm older. I played X-Wing and X-Wing 2. I actually did not play very much of TIE Fighter. I only saw that in college.
My favorite thing about TIE Fighter, and this is a spoiler, but you know, this game's so old, and I don't think
you guys
would play. But fifth chapter of the game, during one of the missions, you're just supposed to just shoot down a bunch of mines in a minefield. And then eventually, your commander calls into your two wingmen and asks them to shoot you down.
Yes.
And you're like, oh my god, what's going on here? And you gotta shoot them down and escape. And then there's this whole other story that comes with it about some sort of secret order within the fleet. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
I never expected a totally like weird change scripted portion of the game in this flight simulator kind of thing. And yeah, it was a big deal to me.
It was a big deal also because it was kind of fun to get shot down in that game because you get that little cutscene with you floating in a Bacta tank.
Oh god, that's X-Wing.
No, I thought they had that for TIE Fighter too, or did you just die?
I don't remember now.
They put you in a Bacta tank too.
I know for sure in X-Wing they do.
Yeah.
Because they basically just replicated the Bacta tank scene from Empire.
But yeah.
You didn't always. Sometimes you got caught, picked up by the enemy, and you didn't get rescued, and so it was game over.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Sometimes you got captured by the enemy, and then they would just take you and you were dead.
Wonderful.
It was great. And then you just made a new character. Woohoo!
So actually then, other things in the expanded universe, the animated series like the droids, Ewoks, and even Clone Wars, largely forgettable stuff. I remember when I was a kid, I had seen Ewoks, and I always remember the theme is "We are the Ewoks." Some other crap.
The Clone Wars cartoon was good.
I know that I saw it, but I honestly can't remember it.
I remember seeing the Ewok movie spinoffs. Oy.
Caravan of Courage.
You stop.
I can't believe you've seen those. Even I haven't seen those. I refuse to.
You refused to. I didn't have a choice in the matter. Oh, I was a kid and I liked Star Wars.
Yeah.
Remember how I got the Ewok coloring activity book?
You know, now
was it based on the anime series?
Wait, you got the Ewok coloring activity book?
You be quiet!
Now that I think about it, those two movies have George Lucas written all over them.
Yes, they do.
They're very family-oriented, kid-oriented.
Yeah. Really freaky Ewok looking on the cover-oriented?
I don't know. I saw it when it aired on TV. On tape or anything.
Yeah, I saw it on tape.
They finally re-released that on DVD.
You should get it.
No, thanks. And finally, other things like the holiday special, which is very infamous at this point, including Chewbacca's relative, Stinky.
Yes.
It was even in the...
White and Nerdy video,
yeah,
for one thing.
Life Day.
Happy Life Day. Then, really, do I want to bring this up? The Clone Wars movie that was just released last year.
Hey. I'm fine with that. Actually, the Clone Wars TV series, you know, that basically the only reason there was a Clone Wars movie is because Lucas saw two episodes and said, well, why don't we release this?
Yeah.
And so they released it in the theater. But the TV series itself, I actually have grown to like it. It's picking up. Originally, I didn't particularly like some of the characters, but Anakin in particular is really impressing me. He actually is a hero of the Republic.
You mean he's not just a whiny teen who has the worst pickup lines in the universe?
There's a character for that called Ahsoka.
Yeah.
There's a great line in a show I really like called The Big Bang Theory, where the characters are sitting around the TV, and one of the characters goes, oh, hey, the Clone Wars is on. And then the other character, who's really... He's very anal about everything. He goes. No, I can't watch it yet because I haven't watched the Clone Wars movie. And I'd rather George Lucas disappoint me in the order he intended.
All right.
What was the animated Clone Wars stuff? Not the 2D animated one. The one that was the one that was done by the Samurai Jack guys, right? Yeah.
Jendi Tartakovsky. That was Star Wars Clone Wars. This is Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
That's the difference.
How did
one
you
word
get
difference.
Them wrong?
Oh, I'm losing nerd. No, I'm not losing nerd points at all.
I'm not
going to
take nerd points
from
you
for that.
Yeah, it's like Clone Wars stuff I really liked because a lot of the time they didn't talk.
It was pure action, and it showed the clones to be worth a damn.
Yeah.
And it was only like 3 to 4 minutes per episode. So if they really screwed up, I didn't lose too much of my life for it.
Exactly.
I didn't lose, you know, my 2 hours. Childhood waiting, and then the 2 hours, and then the other 2 hours when you kept trying to convince yourself it was good.
It's like, wow, yes, we had Darth Vader breathing at the end. And that's what we waited, you know, 16 years for.
Clone Wars Grievous was awesome.
Yeah, that's what exactly what I was going to say. I really like Grievous in the Clone Wars.
As opposed to his Revenge of the Sith version.
The one where he likes to cough a lot.
The one that sounds like he's got tuberculosis.
That's because Mace Windu crushed his chest.
Yes.
But we didn't know about that unless we did the extended universe stuff.
The Clone Wars.
Honestly, he's not too bad in the new series, the Clone Wars. Grievous is pretty cool in that one, too.
Let's talk about one other thing in this kind of... It's not really Star Wars Expanded Universe, but the other films based upon Star Wars or have a whole premise based upon it, including Spaceballs, Fanboys. And there's actually a movie coming out pretty soon. It's still looking for a distributor called May 25th, 1977, which is also about the person that grew up with Star Wars. So, you know, you have to be a pretty big deal that other people are going to make a movie about your movie.
Well, yeah.
And not make it a direct kind of, a very, very direct spoof. Even Spaceballs, I think, has its own kind of universe that it's creating. It's just taking a few choice elements from Star Wars.
A few very blatant choice elements.
Well, yes, but it's not like it's really following Star Wars' story at all.
Yeah,
no.
Well, I like the fan-made films that are part of the story, part of the universe. Have you seen Troops?
Troopers.
Of course. Oh, Troopers. Troops. I love Troops.
Yeah, Troops.
I remember back in the day, everyone was like, dude, guys, I have Troops on VCD. Oh, my God.
Troops was so great.
And it led to a pretty good comic book series, too. Something in whatever the two guys' names
were. The guy that did it, Rubio, went on to do Tag and Bink are Dead.
Yeah. Tag and Bink, that's right.
Yeah. Man, I miss Troops.
I miss Tag and Bink are Dead.
And as far as the lightsaber fan films go, I really only like the Ryan versus Dorkman.
Well, what about the fat kid with the lightsaber?
The Star Wars kid? Oh, man.
I mean, are there any more I should know about?
I actually don't really enjoy very many of the fan films at all. I like I like Dude Wars. It's a Flash animation thing.
I've seen that.
It's all the stories in like a couple minutes. They
like
just
the hip-hop sound?
No, no, they just go to different scenes. And then to talk to each other, they just say, dude. And then they move on to the next scene. And then, like, Darth Vader kills Obi-Wan, and you see Luke going, dude! And then they move on to the next scene.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Man, I missed that. I haven't seen these things in a while.
Yeah, I haven't seen them in a long time.
It's because the fandom sort of went into hibernation out of, you know, collective mourning.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of modern Star Wars fans, if they meet each other in the street, it's like they saw each other naked in a bathhouse. And they'll just, like, their eyes will meet, and they'll know what they did with each other. And they'll sort of look down, and then away from each other. And it's like, hey, how's the kids? Oh, they're doing fine. All right.
I dressed them up as Jedi today.
And then they'll just sort of keep walking.
See, the thing that's funny about that is that these kind of things happen all the time at Star Wars Weekend.
Yes.
At Disney World. And when I really think about it, Mike, there's no other particular property that really gathers this kind of thing at Disney World, right? They have the Soaps Week, and
they have ESPN the weekend.
ESPN weekend, they have like an American Idol thing
for official gatherings, you mean?
Yes, official park sponsored ones.
Star Wars is the big only, one.
It's the only one kind of franchise itself. Yeah.
Actually, that reminds me, you guys should take me to Zombie Day at Disneyland sometime.
Bat's Day?
Sure.
Bat's Day is not zombies.
Oh, I thought there was a zombie invasion of Disney World every year.
I would think they would totally not allow it.
Aww.
If you had people going around pretending to be the undead with like blood smeared all over them, I'm pretty sure they're getting kicked out.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm just thinking of Goth Day, which is kind of like Zombie Boot Day, but lame.
Bat's Day is the goth takeover. Everyone wears black. But going back to Star Wars weekends, I believe they just had it fairly recently, a few weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks now, 3 weeks.
I've still never been to one.
I have never been to one, but I saw photos, and there's some YouTube video of the latest one, and it is hilarious what these guys do. They've got like all these people dressed up as different Star Wars characters, and they're all dancing, including Chewbacca wearing shades and various other things that would never be.
Like the Elvis Trooper.
Oh, Elvis Trooper.
Yeah.
First time I ever saw you were cool. Not really anymore. you really gotta stop.
Like Manfi.
Yeah, we're not. That, I don't want that to be. Damn, I don't want that to be part of this episode. So let's. The other thing is that Star Wars has its own thing going at its conventions. There's always like the 501st Legion.
Ooh, 501st.
And then just like you always see Star Wars at Comic-Con. They have their own convention, Star Wars Celebration, which I don't know if it's still going on anymore. And then the weird thing is that you also see Star Wars at anime cons.
Yes.
And still it's quite the recognizable thing and people are excited to see it. I mean, the power of Star Wars at these conventions is still really, really strong. It's kind of surprising given that the fandom really has kind of died down.
Yeah, it hasn't died out, of course.
I think at this point it is more just the icon of fandom. It's what really defined the fandom and conventions as they are today.
And you don't think Star Trek. Really did it?
Yeah, Star Trek did it too.
Star Trek did it, but not quite to the same degree.
Especially since Star Trek costumes are kind of boring.
Yeah. And it was really just obsession of the three movies. Because, like, Star Trek, there's a lot more to draw from. And so, like, people didn't find it as necessary to really create additional things for it because there's just more. And they're always creating more.
Well, I don't know. I think the fandom for Star Wars is just cycling. Like, I'm a different generation from, you know, even you, Kevin. And right now there's a total new generation that's growing up loving the prequels. You have to admit it.
Yes, I know. One of my coworkers told me
they're growing up. They like the prequels.
Loves it.
They like the Clone Wars CG series that's coming out now. They're growing up with that. So it's just a new wave of people.
It'd be really interesting to see what happens in 10 years when those kids are grown up and like really starting to approach that kind of level of fandom that they could get to. I really wonder what will happen in this community. Anyways. So there's one other thing that, you know, this is a pop culture podcast. One other thing that's so big about Star Wars is just that it hit on pop culture so much. There's so many things that reference Star Wars. People don't need to even know what Star Wars is anymore because pop culture has told them everything there is to know about it. Now, you know, one of the biggest things was that when Friends finally did the Princess Leia in the slave bikini, For Ross's big
fantasy,
dream.
Yeah.
Big fantasy. What was really interesting about it was that a lot of people believed the rumor was because of that episode being aired in public, Kenner Toys finally said, we'll make the Slave Leia action figure because it's now considered acceptable to sell like a toy of something like that. Which was also really interesting because it came with the accessory of the chain that
she
goes around her neck. Which
awesome.
Also, yeah, she uses to strangle Jabba the Hutt. It's a spoiler, who cares? But yeah, something
it's not
like
a spoiler when pop culture has been constantly referencing it for 26 years.
Not the Java strangle.
It's part of it.
Yeah, okay. But
it's part of the whole fantasy, man.
Was there a stigma against about the public seeing the whole Princess Leia bikini thing back then?
Oh yeah. It was the first time that characterized that like that was kind of sexualized. Because before then, they had the exploitation films in the 70s, but it was never a part of the mainstream stuff. Like, the mainstream stuff was very PG and very family-oriented.
Especially the westerns that, you know, that Star Wars is akin to, you know.
Right.
You always have, like, maybe that girl dresses a little bit, like, riskily, but she's got a heart of gold, you know, or she's the school marm and she dresses really conservatively, like, women are very, very off to the side and prim in most Westerns, you know? And so Leia was kind of like that for a while, and then kabam! Gold bikini.
And also, if you think about the rest of that movie, is really geared for kids. A lot more than the first two. And also, I've heard it before from various comedians and stuff like that, where like, they hit puberty when they saw that scene.
Yeah.
I think the funny thing is I've read Carrie Fisher's latest book, and one of the stories she tells the readers is that, it's not surprising to me anymore when a young man will come up to me and say, "You were my favorite from this time period." And then she'd be like, "Oh, great. I was a guy's hand girlfriend." And for multiple guys have come up and told her that. And you just have to wonder to yourself, what would you do if someone said, not you, Dom.
Yeah, I've got that 1,000-mile stare on.
This is a question to not answer. What would you do if you found out that you were, you know, what guys made themselves happy with?
Feedback at s-words.podcast.com.
But, well, here's the thing.
Please don't make this a contest.
She's had, you know, 20-some years to really let that sink in. You know, so at this point, she's pretty much accepted it.
I mean, it's like, it's Leia in the gold bikini. You go back a little bit and you have, who was it?
Raquel Welch.
Probably, coming out of the water.
Andy puts forth the idea of Linda Carter, Wonder Woman.
Oh, was it Bo Derek? Derek?
I think it was a poster of Bo Derek, and also,
Deacon puts forth the idea of James Bond.
I'm just talking about
Sonny Ryder.
Okay, hold on.
That was the first Bond girl, right?
We have Leia in the gold bikini, but you go back, you know, it's on the same level as Marilyn Monroe over the vent.
That's true. Yep.
It's like that kind of iconic sexual awakening moment for a lot of people. And I was trying to remember the name of that girl who they have the poster of in Shawshank. That's another iconic poster. Was it Raquel?
Well, eventually he gets Raquel Welch.
Yeah, it's eventually Raquel Welch.
Shoot, I totally can't remember. And it's the actual short story has her name in the title. Ah!
We'll get it.
Okay.
Grable?
No. Was it Greta Garbo?
Greta Garbo?
No.
Oh,
well. Anyways.
We'll look it up after this podcast, or Kevin will just look it up now, whatever.
So we've also got Star Wars and a whole bunch of other things. Like, recently, Family Guy had its own episode based upon it.
Which Sung is wearing
T-shirts of it now.
It actually came with a DVD box.
Yeah. And then Robot Chicken had its own episode as well.
Well, that's after they peppered, like, every episode with Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. And they even reused some of those clips.
Yeah.
And you also got Ronald Reagan with his Star Wars initiative.
Plan.
Yeah. Let's just ring the earth with dollars and those will stop missiles. Sorry.
We've also got Weird Al with his song Yoda and also
The American Pie one. It was The Legend Begins or something like that. The Saga Begins.
And you got Spaceballs, of course. And then you even had Star Wars exhibits at the Smithsonian at the Air and Space Museum. And I went to Washington, D.C. that summer just to go see it.
Is that why you hate the Air and Space Museum now?
No, that is one of my favorite things about the Air and Space Museum. It's just...
He hates it because they took it away.
I'll go back a little further, which was like the Muppet Babies had
I love that episode. Even in the opening.
Yeah, they always had
Darth
the opening.
Vader's TIE Fighter.
And also, even during the original Muppets, you would have Star
Pigs
Wars parodies.
Space, right?
Pigs in Space.
I thought that was Star Trek.
No, she had the Princess Leia buns.
Oh, okay.
I think it was probably an amalgamation of both, but anyway. Yeah.
I'm sure there's more before then as well.
Yeah.
And then there's that 70s show where they did the whole Star Wars episode.
Well, of course, because during the 70s, that
Yeah, they actually like one of the stories was they wanted so desperately to do the Star Wars episode that they actually skipped a year in order to do it.
To do that. Nice.
That's the thing I find so interesting, that so many television shows have the Star Wars episode. It's kind of strange because Scrubs has one too.
Do they? I don't remember that one.
Well, they have a portion of it that has to do a lot with Star Wars. But then, like, you also come to things like Stephen Colbert has segments in his show that have to do with Star Wars. You also have ESPN Sports Center having little gags like Chewbacca in the locker room and things like that. And then you have Zach and Miri Make a Porno. Kevin Smith says, hey, you know what? We just make Star Wars.
And also, well, actually, that started with Clarks.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
And he's thrown in Star Wars in pretty much every movie.
Even Chasing Amy.
Yep.
Yeah.
The only really comedic part of that movie.
The very first part where it's that black guy ranting about how Darth Vader is a little white guy inside.
What is it he shouts at the end? It's like, Black Rage! Black Rage!
I don't remember.
So silly.
Actually, I want to sidetrack.
I just remember what's a Nubian.
Yes.
What did you think the first time you actually saw Darth Vader? And he was just this balding white man.
Oh, you mean under the mask?
Under the mask, yeah.
I thought it was brilliant in that it's one of those things. Okay, I'll say this. It's the same issue I had with Boba Fett, which was George Lucas has this great idea or this great visual thing, and then he just kind of craps on it by doing something really stupid to it. In this one, he kind of did that, but he did it in a really cool way,
yeah.
So that it's like really shocking, but it makes sense because, you know, it's Luke's father, and you find out that, you know, he's really weak inside.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I remember, like, one of my favorite visuals of Return of the Jedi was when the Emperor lands and you see the Red Guard come out. And that's the first time you ever see anyone in red in the Empire. And like, oh my god, these guys must be so badass that it's like, I can't even imagine.
And they never do anything.
And they never do anything.
goes, sure they do.
They
go into an elevator.
Yeah, he goes, gods, leave us. And then they go, they don't go in the elevator, right?
Oh, they around.
Go around to the back. And I've always had this image of they're just standing there like, should we listen to this?
shut up. No, I think my favorite Darth Vader image is actually in Empire where, you know, it's too early for Luke to fight Darth, and he goes into the tree and he fights against the Darth Vader, cuts off the Darth Vader's head, and it dissolves away, and it's Luke's head, and it's like, wow, he's fighting himself. That's awesome.
You'd be surprised how many people say, like, oh, that's foreshadowing. I'm like, no, it's really just him fighting himself.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Because, you know, Darth Vader is his father. I'm like, then it would be someone that looks like his father.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the whole scene was that he has to battle himself.
Yeah.
In order to surpass whatever.
And yeah. He didn't understand, and that is why
he fails. And that's why he gets his hand cut off, which is something that happens very often in Star Wars movies.
Jim Saw.
Sorry. Well,
technically, Ponda Baba had his arm cut off, not his hand.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, Dooku had both of his hands cut off. Mace Windu, I think, got one hand cut off, and then he got pushed out a window, didn't he?
I don't remember those movies.
That is correct.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. And, you know, I mean, Darth Vader gets his hands cut off once in the prequels, and then, twice in the prequels, and then once in the Jedi.
Yes.
You know, people's hands get cut off all over the place. My God.
It's a Jedi thing.
It's a Jedi thing.
They actually target the limbs to, you know, not kill them, but remove the threat.
Thanks, Mike.
Here's the other thing. SNL has done multiple
Star Wars skits. Yes.
But the one that I think I always remember is actually just Bill Murray singing his little ditty from 1977. Star Wars,
nothing but Star Wars.
Please let these Star Wars
actually
stay.
the one that I remember is with Luke Perry, and it's like, it's this guy dressed up as Obi-Wan going, run, Luke, run. I'm Luke Perry, not Luke Skywalker. Oh, whatever. And then, like, there's someone in the crowd heckling him. It's like, kick his ass, Luke. Kick his ass and take his wallet, which is something that stuck with me for so long.
You also remember the episode where they had the skit when they said, oh, I guess we have to go fight the Empire. Isn't that right? NSYNC. And that's so funny that they never actually, afterwards, you never heard anything about that whole NSYNC being in episode 2 ever again. I guess his daughter must have been like, well, they showed up in the set and I got to meet them. I don't care if they're in the movie now.
Well, they cut it.
That's because the movie never happened, right?
Yes. Yeah,
I don't think they cut it. They're just in the crowd of Jedi.
Yeah, they're somewhere out there. Yeah.
I thought it was in the family scene.
Whatever.
Or he goes to the tattoo area, whatever.
Well, they're supposed to be Jedi in the combat scene on, what is it, Geonosis?
Yeah, on Geonosis in the very end. They're supposed to be in there.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And if they were dual wielding, they're dead.
What does that even mean?
Every Jedi who double wielded lightsabers died at that combat.
Oh.
Yes. Even Darth Maul had his lightsaber split.
That's the other thing. Like, you would think that two lightsabers would be better than one because Jedi keep on trying to do that, but then it turns out that that's not really true. More lightsabers means you have less of a chance of winning, apparently, because Look at Grievous.
Well, he was fighting Obi-Wan. He had no chance.
Thanks, Mike.
I read the novel for everyone, which is so much better than the movie.
Yeah, actually, I hear that.
The final thing I want to mention
probably
is
for me.
Star Wars has this whole thing to do with internet memes as well. Including Star Wars Kid, but also...
It's a trap!
Yes,
is the major one.
It's a trap. Very, very popular thing you see on 4chan a lot nowadays.
Well, you see it everywhere. You don't see it. It didn't start there, did it?
I just remembered. And this is going back to the Star Trek one, which was you asked about how fandom kind of communicated the internet. This was before the internet, period.
Right.
And... I thought about that, and how I remember it was through magazines, because back then magazines were really popular. And you flip to the ads, they would, like, a lot of times the fan clubs would have ads in these magazines.
That's true.
And then you would write to them, and then they would send you, like, newsletters and stuff like that.
Am I to assume that your brother got some? Because there is the Bantha Tracks, the newsletter, the really famous
one. Thinks he may have done one, but I don't know.
Wow. Cause the thing is, it was really funny. It was that when the internet was just getting started for me and I had AOL, I also subscribed to a Star Wars newsletter.
I remember actually joining alt.jarjarbanks.die.die.die.
You didn't go to the Wesley Crusher one?
No.
Wesley die die die.
Oh, I'm surprised you went to Usenet in 1999.
Yeah. I still went to Usenet.
I went to Usenet in high school, which is 95-ish, yeah. 96.
Yeah, having someone mention those magazines, I'm thinking now back, I think probably around 81 or 82, I read an issue of Children's Digest, which had an interview with George Lucas. I know it was before Return of the Jedi came out, because they were talking about how the movies were 4, 5, 6, and then he wanted to go back do 1, 2, 3, and then he would finish the story doing 7, 8, 9.
Yes.
And I remember reading that, and for, you know, decades, it's like, where's the rest of the story?
And then he's basically retconned his own words.
Oh, yeah, that's just what happened.
Yeah.
One final thing before we go into the list that I requested from you guys, and this is the part I dread the most. Prequels.
Ah, it's my time to shine!
How your mother said it last night, Kevin.
I don't have so much of a problem with the prequels. I just really wish I never got so excited about them. Because it was the first time as a fan I really had my heart broken.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're okay movies, but they definitely weren't worthy of...
They lost so much from the Star Wars legacy. Yeah. Because, you know, so here's the thing is that, you know, Star Wars has that mythic quality. You have the hero's journey. He comes from humble origins. He's got the ability. He's got the talent. He builds himself. He fails. And then he does it again. And it works, you know, because he's learned and he's, in some cases, he's gotten into a car accident and his face has gotten all messed up in between movies.
That's okay, because a Wampa can fix that.
Yes. Anyway.
And remember that the stakes are high.
Yeah.
It's good against evil.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in the first movie...
Taxes!
It's not just taxes. It's one planet. It doesn't even get blown up, as an example.
I blockaded your planet for the money.
And not just that, but it's this little kid. And you have to remember that in the climactic action scene, he's an observer. He goes, what does this button do? Oh, wow, look, things are blowing up. Hey, look, now what? Oh, wow, we won. Yay.
Wizard.
And it totally goes against
Obi-Wan's words of that he was a skilled pilot.
Yeah.
And they spend like 10 minutes in the pod race. Because, you know, George Lucas likes races.
And you just look at the comparison just between episode 4 and episode 1, and you just lose so much, you know? I mean, there's that just epic and memorable scene in episode 4. Where he just hears the voice of Obi-Wan and he goes, oh, I can do this without. And he just turns off his targeting computer. And it's like, wow, look, he's doing this on his own and it's all him. And the scene in episode 1 is the exact opposite. It's like, it feels like the droid is doing all the work, you know? And it's like, well.
R2-D2, the true hero of the rebellion.
It's like, well, screw that.
I could tell you my feelings of it, which is, Episode 4 appeals to teenagers. Episode 1 appeals to, like, 5-year-olds. That's the way I see it.
It especially appeals to 5-year-olds who think they have a chance to make it with 16-year-olds.
Well, the thing that's even weirder about The Phantom Menace is that there's so much talking in it. A lot more than you would expect from a Star Wars
film. And also, the music is, it takes a back seat. It's something that you don't realize until you go later, but... Like the real.
Oh, no, I definitely felt that during the podracing.
Yeah,
there's no music.
There's no music in the podracing, and then you have that, you know, that archetypal John Williams for the final fight scene.
Duel of the Fates,
yeah. And it's just like, oh, hey, this is what it could have been. Corn on the cob. Corn on the kebab. What? What?
Corn on the cob, okay.
Corn on the kebab, too.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, and the music just takes such a back seat, and so the emotion isn't there. It's just missing so many things that on every level, Star Wars 4 did better than Star Wars 1.
I think you did sum it up, Kevin. It did not live up to what it could have been. And as a fan, I'm sure you were crushed.
It took me 3 times of seeing it until I finally was like, nope. Not good.
Did you ever watch The Phantom Edit?
Yes, I have seen The Phantom Edit. I've seen both variations of it.
What are the Phantom Edits?
The Phantom Edit was a random fan who eventually was identified as not Kevin Smith. There was like this whole rumor that it was
okay.
It was just a regular fan. Took it's the DVD release, right? He still had like a high quality version of it.
It was, yeah, that's the thing. I don't think it was after the DVD release. It was while it was still in theaters.
It was like at some limbo area between.
Okay.
He took the film, re-edited it, reduced portions of Jar Jar, changed dialogue of the aliens so that they're not actually speaking English.
And the droids, so they're not quite so dumb.
Yeah, and changed the droids' voices as well so they don't be like, what's that? Over there. You know, that kind of crap. And the first variation I saw was pretty good. The second variation, a lot better. And it was just like, how come this one guy, using only what was originally available from this film, not like whatever extra stuff they shot, changed it and made it so much better?
And when they found out who it was, he was saying that I actually watched, you know, the original Star Wars, A New Hope, and watched the editing techniques, the cuts that George Lucas used back then, and used those when making my edit.
Yeah, it's just George Lucas is a different man now than he was then.
We'll fix it in post.
I hate that so much now.
Yeah. And, I mean, I was actually thinking about this going back to Star Trek again, which was J.J. Abrams did such a fantastic job because he was such a big fan, but at the same time, he wasn't involved at all with it before then. So I'm thinking it's with someone who has the vision and who is a fan, you know, would, I'm sure that it would probably have been better than what George Lucas.
Well, I think a lot of what went into that is that J.J. Abrams is invested in the series. So he really wants to see it, keep going strong, but he's also humble enough to know that he's not the Star Trek guy, you know, it's as if Gene Roddenberry today was like, let's just say that he was still alive and senile and crotchety, but he still insisted on retaining Star Trek creative control, then this is the kind of thing you'd get, because he's just as invested as other people, but he doesn't have that humility of being able to accept other inputs and being able to go to realize that he's not the guy, you know?
Hold on a sec. M. Night, are you sure you want to do this?
I think the thing about J.J. Abrams doing Star Trek is that, you know, he's not the definitive Star Trek guy, like what you were saying, so nobody will go up to, so people won't go up to George and be like, I don't think you're doing this right for Star Wars, because he'd just be like, did you create Star Wars?
Exactly.
But J.J. Abrams will be like, maybe we should change it.
It's like, well, let's see. I mean, like, you know, this is how I think Spock would act, you know, that kind
of
thing.
And here's the thing with this I got from the DVD extras of episode 3, which was a lot of it was actually technically directed by Steven Spielberg. And George Lucas, like, for a lot of creative decisions, he defaulted to what Steven thought, which is, I attribute to why that movie was better.
Yeah, it was better edited and better shot. At least the dialogue was still unsalvageable.
I remember seeing the deleted scenes from the third episode, and they should have left a lot of those in.
They said you killed Youngling. Who says younglings? Come on.
Jedi Bindu.
It's a galaxy far, far away and a long time ago.
They still wouldn't say younglings.
It's a term.
You be
like,
quiet.
Like Padawan.
Don't you know that most people in the Imperial fleet are British? I really don't know whether British people say younglings or not. I'm just saying that. You
but
know,
she's not even part of the Imperial fleet.
She's a queen.
What does that even mean?
She was elected queen.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yes.
Anyways. So I asked you guys to come up with your three favorite Star Wars characters. So hopefully you guys have them all.
So once again, I have a themed list this week.
Yes.
No, this is the thing, is that it's a theme that I just, when Sung and I were talking about this earlier, we realized that people in Star Wars die really punky deaths. Was it Boba Fett? Where? For example.
You're about to be like, Chewbacca. I'm like,
what a Wookiee! No, but the thing is that, you know, so I chose the three people that I think have the best deaths in Star Wars. The ones that actually meant something in those, you know, first three movies.
Yeah, can I get my honorable mentions?
Sure. How many do you have?
Just the two.
Okay.
First honorable mention is Han Solo.
Who's scruffy looking?
And my other honorable mention is Grand Admiral Thrawn from Timothy Zahn's books.
Actually, can I add a little thing about Han Solo?
Badass in a totally different way.
this is something about Han Solo, and also just how the prequels were so much different from 4, 5, 6, is that you have to remember that at the end of Empire, he was it was supposed to be, you know, I love you too.
Yeah.
And Harrison Ford was like, this isn't how it would work.
It's not working.
It's not working. This isn't what he would do.
Let's do one more take.
Let's do it again. You know, I love you. I know. And that was so much better. Yeah. You know, they had input.
Yeah, that was an improv. I remember that.
Yeah. And compare that to any line from Anakin in episode 2. And it's just like, any decent actor would stare at this and go, excuse me, sir? No. 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 But this scene is not how it would
but
go.
Hayden Christensen wouldn't be like, George, I think you're wrong. Because George would be like, who made you, Anakin? Wait. You.
and just, you know, it's one of those things where you have to yell at the screen. You feel like yelling at the screen. Listen to yourself! Come on! Ugh. And that difference is just so profound when you compare just, you know, 1 to 4 and 2 to 5. Alright, anyway, honorable mentions.
I'll say my honorable mentions, which are, these are just characters that I thought looked really cool, and I thought could have had a lot of potential. But George Lucas decided not to do anything with them, which is Boba Fett, General Grievous, and the Red Guard.
Imperial Guardsman.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Kevin, honorable mentions for you.
My honorable mention is Figrin Dan and his Cantina Band.
And your quest? Play the same song. Okay.
Oh, Robot Chicken. Or is that Family Guy?
Family Guy.
There are actually two Cantina Band songs.
Yeah, they share creative teams, so they sound a lot like Family Guy and Robot Chicken. Anyway, so my number three, my third best death in the Star Wars movies, is Jabba the Hutt.
I thought that was number one.
Nope.
Okay.
Strangled by Bikini Chick.
Strangled by Bikini Chick.
What a way
because
to go.
Because for one thing, he was one of the few villains who actually had proven that he deserved it before dying.
Yes, by eating that frog.
Well, no, by sending like...
Why did that frog...
By sending a bunch of people to their deaths in the Rancor Pit, sir. But also because, well, it was Leia in the gold bikini who did it. And that makes everything better.
Kevin, you're supposed to say, I believe you're forgetting Ula.
the dancer, the Twi'lek dancer.
I would like to add in another honorable mention. That would be Malikali, who is the Rancor Keeper.
Oh, the one who cries when the Rancor dies? Yes.
I actually mentioned that to Dom. I was thinking about adding him to the list.
Yeah.
The funny thing about Malikali, he's still called the Rancor Keeper in the vintage. He has a figurine in the vintage line.
Yes.
And one in the new line as well.
Nice.
In the new one, you can get more definition of his nipple.
Oh.
But I just found it sad that that happened right before he was about to bust the Rancor out. You read the story in Tales from Jabba's Palace. Yeah. So tragic.
It's such a stupid story.
It was one day till retirement.
Thank you, Rancor.
All right, that's my number three,
Tomorrow was the day because
Jabba had a very satisfying villain death.
All right. Number three for you, Mike.
My number three is At Driver, because I owned his action figure.
There are two, though.
Yes.
Which one? The one on the right or the left?
The one that my sister didn't own. Because my brother owned AT-AT Commander.
No love for General Veers?
Well, that was owned by my brother.
Okay.
But he did, you know, he made up for it by being in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
Yes. As Donovan.
Yes.
Sung, number three.
Anybody.
My number three is Mace Windu, because at least he had a few cool scenes before he died a super death.
I remember the TV spot at the very end where he's holding the lightsaber and pointing, and he goes, this party's over. And I was like, how will this fit in this movie? Maybe it's like a cut scene.
He dies such a punky death. Yeah. Ugh.
There are so many forums. Where they're like words, like lines you want Samuel L. Jackson to say in the Star Wars movies.
Samuel L. Jackson, oh man, so fun. But yeah, Mace Windu, I think, just had the worst death because Anakin's like crying the entire time. Yeah. It's like, we're gonna take him to court.
The awesome thing was he had what's it called, the gold hilt lightsaber with a purple color. Only one like that. It's like so bling.
What's really interesting about Mace Windu is that the action figure they released as a preview action figure that you had to mail away for came with a blue lightsaber.
What was that Star Wars? What was that Star Wars little board / miniatures game that we had with the little decks of cards?
Oh God,
what was that called? Epic Duels or
something like that? Yeah.
I remember we played that a lot. Yeah. Mace Windu was like, man, where does he fit? Because it's like Anakin kills things really fast. Obi-Wan is like, it's impossible to kill Obi-Wan. And Yoda's just badass. But what does Mace Windu do?
Mace Windu is supposed to be, you know, like better in combat than anyone.
He's the most powerful Jedi.
Yeah.
Because he draws on the dark side. He skirts the dark side.
I read that in one of those like encyclopedia books where they explain the different
styles of Jedi,
and they're saying that Mace Windu is very similar to the dark side.
Yes, actually, when they're describing the Emperor's fighting style, it's similar to Mace's Vapod. But that's not even his most broken ability. His Shatterpoint ability is the most broken thing about him. He sees the lines of fate and can see where to press to change the future.
So why didn't he prevent whatever?
Because the Emperor's Shatterpoint, the point that would change the future, is that the Emperor believed Anakin would side with him.
Got it.
And so Mace, thinking that Anakin is a loyal Jedi.
All right. Anyway, Kevin, you're number three.
My number three is the man carrying an ice cream maker in the Bespin Cloud City scene. During the evacuation, after Lando Calrissian tells everyone you have to get out of the city right away because the Empire is taking over, there is a man running through the hallway with an old-style 80s ice cream machine. It looks basically very much like a rice cooker nowadays, a bigger one, just around his arms. What's really funny to me is that they finally named him. a couple years after I finally dropped the whole Star Wars fandom because of the prequels. I don't remember his name right now, but yeah, he's got a name now because
they've all got names.
Because he's now the ice cream man from Bespin.
I'm just remembering the Spaceball scene where they call for the evacuation. It's like, get out the circus! Well, what is it? The five-star restaurant. the orchestra, I think.
Let's see. Close down the training circus. Evacuate all the animals from the zoo.
Right. And so you've got, like, the gorilla. You've got the drummer. You've got the bearded lady. That evacuation scene is great.
I'm the bearded lady. Who are you? Some kind of freak?
All right. So my number two on best deaths in Star Wars is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Because, like, you know, he sees what he's got to do and he does it. He's like, all right, I've got to let Luke, I've got to let Han and all the others escape from Darth Vader. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to die. And in doing so, you know, it'll, one, put everything into motion, and two, it'll really mess with Darth Vader.
I got to tell you, he doesn't die. He becomes...
one with the Force, blah, blah, blah.
And the way I saw it,
but
was...
he dies.
He saw that it wasn't his fight anymore.
Yeah.
And that it should be Luke's fight.
Yeah, it is a generational passing. And it's very, very impressive. Thematically, musically, that comes into it again. You know, it's a great moment in the first movie.
Especially that one shot of Darth Vader's boot coming down on his robes.
Yeah, also the one shot of him. my shot is the one where he looks back, looks forward, closes his eyes. That's really important, you know?
Yeah.
Not the boot shot.
Not the boot shot, Kevin.
I'm just playing with you.
Boot shot.
And not the shot right afterwards where he's trying to go after them and the door closes on him.
Yes. Well, they still hadn't painted in the red on his lightsaber.
That happens to doors when you shoot the panel. My number two is Obi-Wan Kenobi, as portrayed in the novelization of Episode 3 of Revenge of the Sith.
Where he blocks everything.
He's in the full flower of his Jedi might.
Full flower of his Jedi.
Yeah.
Could you put that in a better way, please?
No.
He was really strong at that point.
No, he wasn't.
He was really strong. He was 5 foot
He was...
Thanks, Mike.
Did you just curse?
Yes.
You can beat me out if you want.
I'll bleep it.
Or cut
Blame
it.
The booze.
I love how cutting beeps are really easy.
So it's going to be a 5-minute bleep.
But he is able to defeat everyone he fights against by being defensive. He is the master of the defensive form. And so he doesn't overpower anyone. He's not the strongest the way Mace is. He just is the master of his art.
All right. So?
I'm going to sound like I'm copying everyone, but I made my list a long time ago. It is Obi-Wan.
Woohoo! Because he's the one who actually is decent through all six movies.
Alec Guinness.
Yeah, throughout all
genuine
the movies,
class.
The Obi-Wan character is very good. And, like, in the prequels, he's really the highlight of the prequels to me.
I can't really argue with that.
Yeah.
There's that part of Episode 3 where he's at the top of that ramp with his arms on his hips, and he's somehow got a back breeze making his loincloth flap in the wind. And I'm like, wow, that's totally a wrestling entrance. I want him to go hit my music! And then fireworks to come up from the sides of the ramp, the shuttle ramp. That was a great moment in Episode 3, but not for actually being a good moment in Episode 3. It was mostly for my imagination adding in awesomeness.
Veins are throbbing in Kevin's forehead.
Hit my music!
Yeah, if this were a video podcast, just looking at Kevin would be like...
Come on, Kevin. You liked that shot. It was a nice little upshot. It was trying to upskirt Obi-Wan.
I actually don't know what shot you're talking about. I've only seen Episode 3 once.
It's right before he has that final confrontation with Anakin.
Yes, I know, where he's like, I have the higher ground.
No, right. It's before that. It's right after the...
yes.
It's right after... No, it's right after the confrontation with Padme in that one, where they're facing off. Where, like, Anakin starts choking her or something like that. And then Obi-Wan's like, stop! Hammer time.
That Kevin, would have been a much better movie.
It would have been, too.
My number two comes from a very underappreciated portion of the Star Wars universe.
Jar Jar?
What is it? HK-47.
No.
Dengar Roth.
You know, he doesn't get that much credit for what he did. But what he did was quite a bit. And it's the Dianoga from the trash compactor in the Death Star.
What the hell, Kevin?
The Dianoga represents how much we were willing to let anything go.
That's true.
For Star Wars. Because if you think to yourself, why is there a sewer monster
in the Death Star?
Why? Who put it there? Does it eat the trash? Is it green?
Dianoga's gotta eat.
I know. And we've never really gotten that good of a picture of it, although there are plenty of good pictures of it now, like in like a lot of diagrams, especially Star Wars Creature Guide and things like that.
Pet, they flushed it down the toilet.
Yes, but that's what I'm wondering. we let it pass so easily, but it's totally stupid. And I have to give it credit for being able to be so stupid and no one cares.
Well, there was the Dianoga keeper, and so he was rescuing it.
But you know, it's actually
his brother.
I realized this, which was in every movie, at least one of the characters has to fight a really strange monster in every movie.
There was the ice beast in two, in five, sorry.
In
the
five. Wampa? Is that really a strange creature?
Well, in six, I was thinking
Han does fight the Tauntaun.
That's right. Yeah, I was thinking of Tauntaun. Six, it's the giant, whatever that thing's called. I don't know the name.
The Sarlacc?
The
Sarlacc?
No,
Rancor?
The Rancor.
And then in episode one, it's a giant, I guess it's a giant fish monster.
Summon bigger fish.
And then, let's see.
Darth and droids.
In the Attack of the Clones, it was in the ring when they find the animals.
There's all three the different of them. Animals,
including the, I guess the triceratops-ish thing.
And then in three, what was it? I can't remember.
Monster. And spiky cheetah.
Was there a big monster in three? It started with Dooku and Grievous.
Grievous counts in that.
Oh my god!
Anakin was the monster. Oh god. No. Anyway, what were you going
to
say?
I guess it would have to be Grievous because he was really that kind of interim boss out there to fight.
He was a mid boss.
You're also forgetting about the creature that lives in the swamps of Dianoga that ate R2-D2 and spit him back up.
Dagobah. You got Dianoga.
Whoa, 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 what's the sound? What's the sound, folks? What is it? Is it the sound of a boom?
Yeah, screw you all.
You must go to the Dagobah system, not the Dianoga system.
I was willing to let it pass because, you know, Dianoga was your choice.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I still got Dianoga on the mind.
So what were you going to say, Sung?
Anyways, no, that's it.
Oh, that was it. Okay, the monster. The big monsters.
Yeah.
Yes, so what is your number one, then?
My number one is probably going to be the same number one as everyone else, but that's also because he had the best death.
I sincerely doubt it's the same as my number one.
Well, no, but yeah, still, a lot of people's number ones is the thing, is Darth Vader. Because he's just so implacable in one, you know? And in two, he starts doing the same thing, but you start to see him, you know, wavering a little bit. You know, he's like, "All right, I'm gonna do this to you. We're both gonna kill the Emperor. We'll do this." You know, and then in three, you actually start seeing that Luke can redeem him a little bit. And even though it's too late for him, you know, he still has that moment where he loses his hand, still fighting against Luke. And Luke goes, "Oh man, doing exactly the same things he did." And you know, he just starts calling out to his dad. And his dad helps him in the end, and that's awesome. And so he has, you know, the most fully realized death scene in a lot of movies. You know, he has three movies to sort of set himself up for this, and it realizes itself really well. You know, he kills the Emperor himself. It is kind of a punky death for the Emperor that he just throws him down a pit. But the whole part where Darth Vader accepts that he's dying and he says, and he conceptually says that it's something that should have happened a very long time ago. And he just accepts that Luke is the one to, make all of this happen, bring out balance to the Force, sure. And it's awesome. Well, actually, Anakin does kind of bring balance back to the Force.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Anakin was.
And it's like, hey, look, there's two Sith, and then there's like, one Jedi. That's pretty balanced, right?
So really, Obi-Wan did it by allowing himself to be killed.
He's with all this Obi-Wan love.
I'm sure all the girls would say it was Obi-Wan because he's played by Ewan McGregor.
I'm surprised you didn't include Captain Nita when he got choked to death.
Apology accepted.
Captain Nita.
Who was the guy who died in order for Captain Piet to become Admiral Piet?
Admiral Ozzel.
Yeah. That's right, Ozzel. Who loses the Millennium Falcon in the asteroid field, was it?
No.
Was that the different one?
The fleet comes in too close to Hoth and they get detected.
Right.
Okay.
All right, Mike?
Captain Nita loses the Millennium Falcon.
I was pretty sure my number one would not match your number one because my number one doesn't die.
Oh.
Lame.
Jar Jar?
He's Wedge Antilles.
Damn it! The one who survives like all of the movies.
Oh, well, you took my number one.
Both Death Stars. He doesn't have any Jedi powers. He's just normal dude.
Yeah, but he gets kind of a punky shot down, not really a death in the first one.
He's not even shot down.
You're not.
He's shot.
Yeah, he's shot and he has to go back.
You're no good to me back there. Sorry.
But yeah, I like Wedge Antilles.
You're no good to me. You can't do very much good back there.
Okay.
For no real quantifiable reason.
This is the thing is about the Death Star run is the only part that I memorized was what Red Leader says because I like to chant it to people who are taking too long in the toilet. Stay on target.
Listen up.
Almost there.
Heads
away is what I said at the end. It's like, no, just impacted on the surface. It never fails to get them out of the bathroom.
Do you also tell people what you would have told Jack Porkins? Pull up. No, I think I can handle it. No, pull up.
Yeah.
Wait. So Wedge Antilles, for no real quantifiable reason, it boils down to Harry Potter syndrome. He's the boy who lived.
I have Wedge Antilles. He's the boy who lived, and he went on to, you know,
do Rogue Squadron.
Rogue Squadron, which awesome. And he's also one of the 15 characters that appear in two or more of the Star Wars films before any special edition changes.
Okay.
Wait, doesn't he appear in all three?
Yes. Well, you have to be
at least two. Lando's in two.
Boba Fett's in two.
Yeah, exactly.
Before special edition.
Et cetera, et cetera. Okay. All right, Sung.
My number one is Yoda. And if you've realized this, all of my picks are Jedi.
That's fine.
They all have different...
Strong Jedi.
I have no Jedi.
Yoda was actually kind of an honorable mention on my list because he just dies of old age.
What color lightsaber did Obi-Wan have? He had blue, right?
Blue.
So each of my Jedi had different colors then. Okay. Yoda, because he is the ultimate Jedi, and it was a character that, although George Lucas tried his best to screw up, he just couldn't. Because Yoda is that awesome.
Thanks, Frank Oz.
He's so
Thanks.
Strong. He resisted George Lucas.
That makes him the strongest.
Is Yoda the one from the prophecy? The one who will bring balance to the Star Wars movies?
He was actually the chosen one before.
I know.
Yeah. Don't you remember Yaddle?
Yeah.
Female Yaddle. She didn't do much. What a stupid name.
And Andy just slapped himself in the head.
Yeah, that's the name you pick.
George, what do we name this? Well, we have Yoda. Yada? What about Yaddle? Yeah, that's good.
Well, we have a Lando. How about Londo?
No. We're going to call this guy Nien Num. And he's going to go, me, 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 me. We did it!
The stupid catfish guy. Oh!
No, he's a guy that's wearing a mask over his face, but that's his face, really.
He's from Sullust.
You guys, I hate you.
We have his action figure. That's why I know him.
He comes with an assault rifle for some reason.
Really?
Yes.
In the original, I think he came with a pistol.
Oh, okay.
Weak.
He got upgraded.
Assault rifle.
Mine has a rifle.
That's all, folks.
Oh, God.
There's also a part he goes, a-team. Yeah.
You know.
You're in my realm, man.
I'm going to say this now. I used to play the old Upper Deck Star Wars card game in high school. And I remember that there was a series of cards that was just called, This is Just Wrong. And the first image on the card was the first Luke and Leia kiss. The second, This is Just Wrong, still, was the second Luke and Leia kiss.
What about that kiss between Lando and Yen Nub? When they survived the Death Star. That was awesome.
Or the kiss between Mon Mothma and the Bothan spies who are dying.
Yes,
the ones who were pierced by many arrows.
And the kiss between Luke and the Dianoga. So many great moments.
So many great moments.
Okay, so we probably should be wrapping up this episode.
Before you start that, let me ask you this, because I've been wondering about this. So the Clone Wars, what were they fighting about? Why were the two sides?
The separatists.
This is not Star Wars to me, so I don't know the answer.
All right, Mike.
Dooku was leading the side, you know, the separatist side.
Right.
That's literally what they wanted to do. They wanted to secede from the Republic.
But why? Was there a reason?
Basically...
Taxes?
Yeah. It boiled down to the appearance of the Republic not allowing the... God, what is it?
Wow,
it's Mike stumbling against Star Wars lore.
Wow.
But it's basically the Trade Federation was part of a conglomerate which had lots of... they're the ones that had the droid armies.
Right.
And they're the ones that were feeling, quote, commercially restrained by all of the...
So it was taxes.
It was all economics, yes.
Jeez.
What a great idea.
Yes.
Yeah. And the fact that they didn't really explain it in the movies.
Yeah, and so the thing was, since they felt that they weren't able to operate freely under Republic law, they wanted to secede. And they got Dooku as their charismatic leader, who was, you know, a rich noble who would go with them. Grievous was in charge.
And he also had the Palantir, so that he could see into Sauron.
He also made you kneel before him.
Yes.
That was...
If you recall, son of Duril.
No, that's totally different.
Yeah, okay.
That was Valorum.
Well, that's Chancellor Valorum. I get my old men mixed up. I have both their action figures. Valorum comes with a staff.
What action can Valorum do besides be incompetent?
Yeah.
What's Chancellor Valorum from?
He's the one who was voted against.
Oh.
Vote of no confidence.
He's Terrence Stamp.
Oh. Yeah. I know right now.
Chancellor Zod.
was this movie 2? Because I still haven't seen all of movie 2.
That was the one.
First one.
Was it?
Yeah, he has a very, very brief role in it.
Wow. That really is unmemorable.
Yep.
Yeah, he was the previous chancellor.
He looks just about the same as his role as Stick in the Electro movie.
Which was also not very memorable.
Also, get smart.
You see, Terrence Stamp I still remember from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. What? What was that sound
no,
for?
No, that's fine. Just like, I think we're going to spin into Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Terrence.
No, let's just stop there.
Okay, let's finish this off. I remember I also asked some of you guys about any other reasons why Star Wars affects the pop culture that you know of. I didn't come up with a list. I know Mike had a couple points, but I think we went over them, really, right?
The main point is that Star Wars is the reason we have sci-fi today. It proved to everyone, proved to the whole world, that sci-fi is not a dead form, and you can make money off of it.
Yep.
So everybody tried to do it. You know, with some
very
less than spectacular results.
Right. For me, it was...
Less Starfighter rocks!
It was, before that time, it was like 2001, very clean and white. And Star Wars was the first sci-fi show to be like, well, what happens if it's not like that? And it was dirty and kind of used. And
it was a
lived-in
universe.
It's been around for a long time. And that's... Because of that, you got like stuff like Battlestar and stuff like that.
Well, where... the new Battlestar.
Well, even the old Battlestar.
The old Battlestar was a pretty big ripoff of Star Wars.
Yeah, and it was a definite departure from Star Trek. In that Star Trek, you had these large ships, and in Star Wars, it's like let's make it interesting. Let's have a bunch of smaller ships and have them go really fast, and have it actually be scale so that you know like.
It's like
in Star Trek, all the ships are about the same size, and even if like one's bigger than the other one, can't really tell because they're in space and there's nothing to judge it by. But in Star Wars, he's like, well, okay, let's get around that point by having a big ship and having an insanely large ship,
and remember
next
that,
to it, and then have like a giant planet-sized space station next to it.
Yeah, and the thing is that you know they always give you that sense of size at the very beginning of the movie because
yeah.
at the after the scroll, there's always a ship passing over. And it's always huge. Is it always huge?
Well, they started that whole trend of you see a ship and you're like, well, that's pretty big. And then you see the big, big, big ship.
Oh, mama.
Yeah, it's one of those things that Star Trek hasn't really done very well. Because, like, I remember when, this is going back to Star Trek, sorry. I'm more of a Star Trek fan than I am Star
Wars. It's fine.
But, like, I remember in Next Generation, the first time you ever see the new Romulan Warbird, like, you see the bridge's face, like Picard when the ship decloaks, like, oh my god, this like this thing is like insane. The thing is, you don't really see, and because it's kind of badly shot, is that the Romulan warbird is like at least double the size of the Enterprise, and the Enterprise itself was big. The Romulan warbird, besides like the Borg ships, it's probably the biggest ship.
I'm just thinking that
the Next Generation.
That's actually something that J.J. Abrams had in mind when he made the new Star Trek movie. He actually gave you a sense of scale because, you know, that other ship is just dwarfing the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Actually, and then you also have the little personal Spock ship.
The jellyfish.
But yeah, gives you a bigger sense of scale. It's true.
Any quotes or sound offs, get them ready. If you want to send us any questions, emails, feedback, any suggestions for future topics, go ahead and email them to us at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. Don't forget you can find all of our older episodes and the schedule of new episodes to come at www.s-words-podcast.com. And there's also that always quick and easy place to bug us, twitter.com/s_words. And by that, I really mean we're bugging who?
That's me.
Yep.
Yay.
All right. You guys have your stuff ready?
I do. Uta guta solo? Jabba wa ninchikos? Something.
I can't believe you didn't prepare this. No, I'm kidding.
Don't worry about it. I just remember the uta guta solo.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was. Tell Jabba I have his money.
Jabba wa ninchikos? Something.
No, I don't have it with me. No, whatever.
I'll just say it. Danny's meat is delicious, and his special sauce makes it all the better.
Yes. You should all get it in you.
We had a barbecue today.
What he's got, you've got to get it, put it in you.
It's like the Dianoga of meat.
No one knows why it's there, but we just excuse it.
I have a shout out to the 501st Legion. Keep up all the good work, and hi to AJ.
Well, I never got to tell my story at the very beginning that I was originally going to tell, but you know, even after everything that's still going on with Star Wars, and yeah, I'm not really appreciating anything that's going on with it anymore.
There's a TV series coming soon.
The TV series that never seems to be any closer to being made.
No confirmed casting. No.
Even with all that stuff, I don't really care about anymore. Just we saw Up recently, and there's a thing at the very end of the credits. Just a pic. There's just a photo, and it's of one of the characters going to go see Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I was like, I appreciate this so much. And not because of just that, because it was like, wow, that was cool to me, because it was like, oh, I remember the first time I saw Star Wars as well. But just that, you know, there's still the other Star Wars fans out there and still trying to make it with what they remember and they love. So, yeah, my shout out is to everyone that still loves Star Wars and still appreciates it. You know, even with people telling you the prequels are not good or whatever is coming out is still not good, it's still good to know that there are people that really, really like this franchise that I still love, it's just not as much anymore. And I would also like to give a shout out to the writers of How I Met Your Mother for the episode about Ted Mosby not being able to marry a chick that does not like Star Wars, because that is how it should be.
But he did not marry her because she didn't like Star Wars.
Well, yeah.
Well, hey, I'm torn
spoiler,
between
by
I'm,
the way to How I Met Your Mother.
I'm torn between that one and the one where they realize that they're not compatible because Robin doesn't like Field of Dreams.
For me, it was just like, you know what? They're right. I actually can't marry someone that doesn't like Star Wars. That is a genuine rule for me. I would not be able to take it. So yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, How I Met Your Mother. Okay, we are now on.
Hello, and welcome to the Swords Podcast. I'm Cedric Willoughby. I would like to thank Kevin Chu for inviting me on this podcast.
So let's start with that question we usually like to ask each other. What is your very first sword that you ever owned?
I must say that I began with the fencing saber.
I started with the Master Sword.
Master Sword? Is that a particular smith who crafted that for you, or...?
I started with the sword that I was born with.
So I got to kind of cheat a little bit. I chose lightsaber because that's the one I had at the very beginning. You know, that's how I roll.